You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about ladies in tech with special guest, Jen Lucas. I'm your host, Leia Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is sponsored by Soulspace. Soulspace is a 10-year-old web development firm with experience in the most challenging of project settings. Soulspace builds versatile tools that elegantly meet complex needs. Soulspace happily serves mom-and-pop shops and Fortune 100 multinational organizations with equal ease, effectiveness, respect, and craftsmanship. Visit soulspace.com to find out more.
Control Click would also like to thank Pixel and Tonic for being our major sponsor of the year. Hey, Leia, how have you been?
Pretty good. I went to this great Refresh Seattle meetup last night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and we had Matthew Anderson, who's the design lead at OneHub, and he spoke about living style guides. So,
We were just talking about that for a project.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really very timely. And honestly, I think that might be a future topic, maybe. Mm.
Sounds good. I'm so glad that since you've moved to Seattle, you've not only like explored the city and found great restaurants and stuff, but you've also made so many connections with local designers and devs.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's really one of the benefits about moving into a larger market city like Seattle, especially because it's such a tech city. You're really exposed to some of the best people in the industry that's willing to share their information. So it's very exciting.
Cool. Well, as much as I want to hear more about Seattle, we've got a great episode today, so I want to get to it as soon as possible. But I first wanted to mention we have some news for Control ClickCast. We moved our site to our partner ArcusTech's virtual SSD servers this weekend, and you and I both noticed a significant improvement in page loading.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like it's a local install, you know?
Yeah, and we also used their content delivery network as well, and we moved a few more of our assets to that, which I think also made it some performance improvements.
Mm-hmm.
So we also have some news in the world of content management systems.
Yes. So mostly we'll be mentioning news that seems major based on our discretion and only based on really CMSs that we're personally following. So if our listeners hear of anything interesting or if there's anything major that we did miss, please contact us and just let us know. And we'll make sure that in our next episode, we'll clarify or make sure that those updates are mentioned.
Right.
So based on that, one of the bigger updates is for Craft. Craft version 1.2 is now out, and Brandon and team has actually updated version 1.2 a few times already with some build updates. And this includes some control panel interface changes as well as, and here's the big news, a new introduction of new section types. It used to be one sort of like section type and it's just general repeating entries under different sections. But now there's structures, there's singles, and then the typical one that I just mentioned, which is like the entry types. And Craft 1.2 also comes with a new demo site and improved documentation.
That makes me happy. I think documentation can always be improved.
Yeah,
not just for Craft, sure, but for anybody. So I like that that was part of the focus of the update.
Yeah, I agree.
One other thing to mention about Craft, I think it might be interesting for some of our listeners, but they're compiling a list of web host providers that work well with Craft on the Google Groups. So we'll post the link to that in our show notes. If you work with a host that's working with a Craft install, go ahead and add that to the list.
Yeah, absolutely. And in other version update news, Perch, which was a sponsor of our last episode, came out with version 2.3. It includes interface changes to the login screen and introduces something called repeaters, which allows you to repeat sections of a template.
And Expression Engine 2.7.1 came out. It's a stability release, and it squashed over 30 bugs, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's about a month between the last release, and I hope that's an indication that we'll see more rapid updates in the future.
Mm-hmm. And the other major Expression Engine news, which I think all developers should really pay attention to, is that they'll be changing the PHP requirements for the upcoming version 2.8. In the blog post that they mentioned this, they allude that approximately 6 months from now, perhaps. Basically, they posted it saying that you've got 6 months to prepare for this PHP update. And the PHP update is to version 5.3.10. And we'll have a link to all these updates on our show notes.
Yeah, cool. So I'm so excited about this episode. We've been wanting to do this topic for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're talking about the culture of women in technology with special guest Jen Lucas. Jen is a front-end developer, writer, educator, and passionate advocate for women and girls interested in technology. Formerly HappyCog's Interactive Development Director, Jen is now an independent front-end consultant. She's also a teacher for Philadelphia's Girls Develop It program and founded Ladies in Tech, a resource dedicated to supporting and celebrating female speakers in technology. Welcome to the show, Jen. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, ladies. How's it going?
It's going well.
Great.
I've been wanting to I get all excited about your news updates right now, and it makes me want to jump and start coding and trying all the new things.
Yeah, every time there's an update, it's like new shiny toy, must play.
Totally.
So before we move forward, Jen, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So recently I've been doing some changes in my life, as you mentioned. So more recently I've been traveling a ton, and I just got back from Sweden and Norway.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. Really cool. I never thought that I would have been in Scandinavia, but turns out I got to go to Scandinavia. So that was really cool. And next week, I am going to Maryland, Tennessee, and New York. So it's a very eclectic travel schedule for me recently, which has been really awesome. And I like traveling. And so that's been a lot of fun. And I'm also trying to embrace the fall. That is my new goal this year, is trying to get... I came back from Sweden to a quick, brisk Philadelphia weather, and so went pumpkin picking this weekend.
Aww.
And
fun.
Yeah, bought some apple cider, trying to do all the things that are good about fall and not miss summer too much. But
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those are all really fun stuff, right?
It is.
I personally love fall and all the squashes that come with that.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Yeah. And when you go to Maryland, make sure you have some crabs. I miss it terribly. That's where I'm from. So,
you know, I have been a vegetarian for about 11 years.
I knew that about you.
Well, crazy enough, 2 months ago, I have made the switch to pescatarian.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
So crabs fit into that.
So crabs, here I, you know, Maryland, I will see what their crabs have.
The best. I actually miss them, physically crave them.
My boyfriend is the same way. I have gone with them to, you know, Maryland has those crab picking things where they come and they bring you the trays of crabs.
Yeah, all you can eat.
Yeah, it's like the pistachios of the sea, right? And everyone's going to town on them, and I'm just it seems a lot of effort for this. So
I love that, pistachios of the sea.
Everyone's tweetable, are hurting, you know. And you're sitting there, and they look all, and I'm ugh, I don't know. But
yeah, you have to get into, I think, the social aspect of it as well, because you do sit and pick crabs and drink beer and just talk for hours.
Yeah, I like two of those three things. So we'll see if I can get into all three, but I'm working my way into it. I try to get a new food a year. I find a new food or drink every year. Last year was eggs, this year is seafood.
Wow.
Oh, interesting.
Next year's going to be gin.
Fortunately, there are lots of different cocktails that use gin you can really explore.
It's important to diversify your diet, I think.
So before we go too deep into the topic of ladies in tech, I want to know more about your history as a tech lady. When did you first get the spark of interest for technology and coding?
Totally. So I've always really been into math.
Oh.
And I loved math classes all through grade school, through high school. And also in high school, I really liked video editing. And so I had a mix between the number side and the computer side. And in college, I did video production. And it got more and more into computers on that thing. And I was like, well, I really like the computers. I'm not sure how much I love the video. And I still really love the math. And so when you sort of combine them, you sort of get coding as this like offspring of the two of them. And I was like, I really dig this. So once I like sort of figured out the ins and outs of HTML through like GeoCities, I was like, this is awesome.
Awesome. GeoCities reminds me of, I think everyone started there and so did I. That was basically where my first website was, which was a Sailor Moon website.
Everybody? Nice.
Emily, how about you?
You know, it always surprises me to meet people, but I was pretty late to the game in terms of technology. And in many ways, I am to this day. I never get the newest devices. I don't ever upgrade my software. I'm just like a curmudgeon when it comes to this stuff. But I didn't even have a computer in my house until I was in my mid-20s. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I didn't use a computer in college other than for like – it was like a word processor, like for papers and stuff. But I was working in marketing for an accounting firm, and I was focused on the content of the website, and I got tired of asking the IT department to make updates. So I started, you know, messing around in the HTML. And the thing that it connected for me, because I was really into yearbook when I was in college and high school, was the instantaneous publishing, which you can't get with print. But when I was working on the web and learning HTML, I was like, oh my God, it's instant. It's there. It's live. This is amazing. And I was sold from that point forward.
So Jen, you mentioned that you started messing around in college. So then how did that develop into a career?
So essentially, I sort of once – coding just sort of made sense to me, you know, like when things click. It's like mm-hmm. that little light bulb, like the guy in the IKEA yeah. catalog. When you finally put together that piece of IKEA furniture and you're like, yes. So that came to be easier than putting together furniture. And I then started to seek that out and keep going. And I eventually switched my major to multimedia and web design. And when I graduated college – I went to a school with quarters. So you basically ended up in really small classes and you saw a lot of the same people. And that was really neat for like networking and building up it's like a system of friends and people you could work with on projects. And a lot of people that I went to school with ended up all going to work for Lockheed Martin after college. So it ended up being like all the people you knew would be like, well, why don't you come work with us? It's like really awesome over here. We're like doing these training simulations. They were like Navy training simulations in JavaScript. And it was really fun. So I went and did that out of college. I worked with all the people I'd been working with for like 2 years. And we were doing like some pretty neat stuff over there and working with really smart people. And so it was really neat to like see sort of transition from being more designed to being more code heavy and sort of clicking with this group of other people that were really code heavy and then sort of following with each other to see where our careers went. Mm-hmm. And it was neat to go to like sort of still feel that like, you know, leaving college can be kind of scary.
Yeah, sure.
Like, what am I going to do? And then it felt really good to go to like a first career job with people that I was already really familiar with and knew how they worked.
Now, I mentioned in my introduction for you that you are a teacher for the Girl Development Program in Philadelphia. Can you talk a little bit about that program? And then I'm really curious, what's different in terms of working with young girls versus, you know, your peers and adult women in terms of getting them excited and engaged with technology?
Sure, totally. So Girl Develop It started in New York City by Sarah Chips and Vanessa Hurst. And basically, the goal of Girl Develop It is to offer these low-cost programming, coding, and development classes for geared towards women, create an environment where if it's the majority of women, people will feel more comfortable coming to the class, asking questions, just basically a supportive environment. And Sarah and I had known each other, you know each other through the internet, which is always like such a weird thing that we have, these relationships we have now with people. And Sarah had reached out to me about bringing Girl Develop It to Philadelphia. And so we had like a phone chat and I was totally interested. And then so she came down to Philadelphia and we met up in person and discussed sort of the plan for it and how they were going to expand, because basically they've been expanding to different cities over the last few years. And so I told her I was definitely interested in teaching. I sort of love that whole idea of sharing and I loved what they were doing. And so I was totally on board, slightly intimidated because I never really taught a class of beginners before. Mm-hmm. And these were people, the idea is that it's the class I was teaching, or that I still teach, the intro to HTML and CSS class, it's for people with absolutely no knowledge to very little knowledge. And I'm used to saying things like, oh, you know, you just want to move that thing over there. And you're, yeah, just code that up like that, you know, and not fully explaining it. So I was just excited and intimidated to sort of teach a new group of people. And what I really like about the students of Girl Develop It is, like, you sort of never know what you're going to get. So the classes range from about 20 to 30 people, depending on the class size, the space that we have. And sometimes it is, the last class I had a high school science teacher, and I also had a high school junior taking the class.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah, so it's like really, it's a wide variety. And another time I actually had a mother-daughter took the class. So the mother brought, her daughter was interested in knowing code, so her mom took the class too.
Aww.
And that was really cool. I know. And then a husband-wife took the class together. So it's been like this really wide variety. And what I do is on the first class is we go around the room and everyone sort of introduces themselves and sort of describes why they're taking the class and what they hope to get out of it and what they're currently doing. And it's so neat to see all the different people in sort of every single aspect of life that is interested in learning code. That's been really neat for me to see. But also a little crazy, right? Because you're talking about having to appeal to a very different audience. So I find that no matter how old, young, or inexperienced with professional careers or fully experienced, people really like cats. And so I like to include a lot of cats in my teaching and general in life, a lot of cats. But I think being enthusiastic is so important. And it's something that when you learn something new, or it can be really intimidating, right? And that's anything. That's, you know, whether it's HTML or if it's, you know, learning French or if it's learning how to make furniture or anything like that, it's always sort of scary to go into the unknown. You know, like, will you be good at it? Will you suck at it? Is it something that you'll get right away, or it's really frustrating? And so I think it's so important to set up the class as like an open environment where no matter who you are, anyone can learn this. Mm-hmm. And it can be really frustrating at times. But anything that I think we've learned usually is frustrating at one point or another. And you make it through, and the more and more exposure you get to what you're learning, the clearer and clearer it becomes. Mm-hmm. You know, I go back to the IKEA thing, but the second time you put together that stupid expedite bookcase, it's way easier than the first time. You know, it's a matter of sticking with it. It usually works. I've had one person who said to me that cat's really their thing. and I said, well, would you prefer another animal? And, you know, they did. So I used another few animals in some examples. So
nice.
Yeah.
Throughout your career journey, you started to speak at events. What prompted that decision? Because that's hugely intimidating.
Yeah, totally, right? I think that goes back to sort of this idea, the same reason I wanted to teach. You know, I think something that the three of us have in common is we've always really embraced web standards and sort of the open source community and the idea of sharing all the knowledge we have. Mm-hmm. Entering the web world, you know, you see all these people sharing their ideas through like blog posts or speaking. And you're like, wow, you're just telling me about that? I feel like some of the other things I've been interested in, you know, people are really secretive. And I love the part of the web that's so open, that's so like, here's how you do things, because everyone wants it to be a better place, right? We don't want those old websites of the past. Like, people weren't like, yeah, you know what? You should really keep that Flash intro on your site. That's really good for you. You know, people would like explain why that could be maybe not the best decision. And I always really liked that. And so I wanted to share also. And I thought it's only right, you know, if I've learned so much from other people that I wanted to sort of share the knowledge I've learned. And if it's of interest to anyone, put it out there and see how I could sort of give back. And so that was something that was really sort of on my list of things to do. And something that HappyCog, working there, they really embraced as well. You know, Jeffrey Zeldman's like the king of web standards and sharing knowledge. And so we are very encouraged to get involved. And we were actually approached from Philly Kaya group here about doing like a HappyCog related panel that sort of just walked through the process of HappyCog. And so we agreed to do it. And basically we had about six of us went and we each talked about our aspect of the process. So, you know, like we had someone to talk about design, we had someone to talk about project management. And then I, myself and Mark Hewitt basically presented together to talk about development, front-end and back-end development, since it's closely tied. And we did, so basically we split up the hour into 10-minute segments, and I did one 10-minute segment at the end with Mark. And it was definitely intimidating, but presenting with a friend and colleague made it a lot easier, because you sort of have that safety net where it's like, if I forget what I'm saying, here's Mark Hewitt to save the day.
Yeah, take it away.
Yeah. So Mark, right? You know what I mean? But it was really good. And it made practicing a little more fun. You know, when you're practicing for an event, sometimes sitting by yourself can be a little bit, also it's kind of weird to talk to yourself.
Totally.
When you're rehearsing, speaking. Mm-hmm. So that's another part that's nice about doing tandem presenting. And so I ended up presenting with Mark, and it's funny, this talk, I felt really good after, and I was like, yeah, you know, I did it. I was really nervous. I didn't really remember it when I was done. You know that feeling? You're like, done? You're like, what did I just say?
Yeah.
No clue. And they actually put a video up online, and I dreaded watching it. I was like, I shouldn't watch it. And then finally one day, like, I clicked it, and I was like, oh boy. And I was watching it, and I was like, you know, I'm cringing, and I'm listening to myself, and this is awful. And then you just sort of, like, I just had to remind myself, like, I am my own worst critic. Mm-hmm. And I made it through. Probably no one else noticed how many times I said that one word, you know, and no one, like, noticed that maybe that line didn't make any sense at all. And you sort of, I watched it, like, a few minutes of it. I definitely didn't put myself through the pain of watching the entire thing, but it was good to sort of see yourself on video, to sort of see the things that you're doing.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to have that kind of disconnect when you present, and then your own perception of how it went, and then how others view it. And I remember one of my first presentations ever, and I was lucky, part of the audience were friends of mine, and they said, oh, it went really well, but you frowned a lot. Oh. You know what I mean? And it's just like, no, that's my bitchy resting face. You know? I'm not frowning. It's just, that's how my face looks like.
Oh, that's so funny. A coworker of mine used to sit next to each other, and we used to have an agreement, because sometimes when you're coding and you're really concentrating, it turns out that some of us make a face, just like not a great face. And she used to be like, tell me if I'm making this face. And because I'd sit there, I'd be like, you're making that face. You look really mad right now. And, you know, of course, we never mean to be, but it's always funny to think, like, what do I look like when I'm not
paying attention to what you look like?
Yeah.
Leah, have you ever watched video of your presentation?
Yeah, just to kind of see how I deal with it, but I never go through the entire thing. It's just more, okay, did I sound like I knew what I was talking about? You know, or just mostly like, did I make sure that I actually say what I wanted to say, or did I miss like a point? Mm-hmm. Right? Because whenever you present something, there's a lot of things that you could talk about, and then you try to kind of condense that, but sometimes you actually miss. You're like, oh man, I need to make sure I say this the next time I speak.
So, Jen, from your first speaking engagement till now, I imagine part of that prompted your founding of Ladies in Tech website?
For sure. Essentially, I kept speaking, and the first few things I did were all panels. And it was really, being on a panel is really great. It's great because if you're on a dual presentation with two, or you're a panel of five, it's again, that safety net, but also splits the amount of work you have to do, right? So that was really great. And then I was at a conference in 2009 in DC, and it was the first JS Conf there. And when I was there, I went down to the conference room. I was in a hotel, and I pick up my badge and I check in, and you know, everything seems normal. It's the morning though, and I'm not a morning person, let me throw that out there. And so I get my coffee and I sit down, I go into the room, and the room had like a bunch of round tables, and it was like a long rectangular room. And so basically if you're on like the left side, you can't see the right side too well. And so I'm sitting over there on the left side, and everything seems completely normal. There's less women than men, but that's something I've gotten used to with more single-focused conferences as opposed to multidisciplinary conferences. And the conference was about to start, and the organizer got on stage and basically announced that things were starting. And all of a sudden, most of the women in the room got up and left.
What?
Yeah. Totally, right? And so I'm sitting there and I have a very overactive imagination and I watch a lot of sci-fi movies and I'm like, what is going on?
Twilight Zone.
Yeah, exactly, right? And I was like, what's happening? But all of a sudden I look around and from where I'm sitting, I am the only woman in this whole entire room.
Wow, only.
At this point, that was what I had thought because I didn't see any other women. And the conference starts and I'm like, am I supposed to be here? Like, what?
Like, am I allowed?
Yeah, exactly. It felt so weird. And it's the only time I've ever felt like this, that I felt completely out of place. A little bit like there was a few breaks, you know, where you could actually stand up. And once I stood up and could see the other half of the room, I saw there was two other women in the room. And I'm looking, I'm like, this is so weird. And I asked, I like turned and I was like to the person sitting next to me, I'm like, do you know what's going on? And what I hadn't known was that JSConf does this really awesome thing, and it's called the Significant Other Track. And basically, Chris and Laura, who run the conference, Chris stays with the conference, and Laura, they invite the significant others of all the attendees to come to the conference, and then Laura took them on a day trip with a tour of DC. Yeah. And it's really cool for people that travel and like when it stinks to leave your family at home. And so basically they want you to invite your family to come with you. They do something to the day and then they join the parties at night, which is
nice.
It's totally awesome. But I didn't know that. And it turns out that all the significant others were women at this specific event. And so when most of them had left, that's why they were leaving. And this sort of was like one of those things where I was just like, I can't believe there were so few people. But like, to be fair, this was I think 150 people at the conference and it sold out. And it sold out pretty fast. And so it was just one of those things, and it was the first one, and there wasn't that much knowledge of it. So it wasn't like the fault of anyone that this was happening or anything. It wasn't like, no girls allowed or anything. It just is how the cookie crumbled. And so there ended up being this talk that went short. And what they did to fill the time was they had lightning talks. And during the – they basically invited anyone to come up from the audience and give at most a five-minute talk. And the other thing besides being three women attendees, there was no female speakers at this event. And so they're sitting there and someone goes up and starts giving a lightning talk. And I'm sitting there going, you should say something. You should say something. This is in my head. I'm not saying this out loud. That'd be really weird. And Chris is like, anyone else want to speak? And like my body fighting with my brain, my hand went up anyway. And I was like, So I went up without exactly a plan of what I was going to say. I just knew that I felt like there was an elephant in the room that should be addressed. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of went up there and did some blabbering thing about like how cool the conference was and how cooler it would be if there was more women. So like maybe next year, tell your friends. And maybe like make sure people register before, like females registered before it sold out. And sort of just like, I don't know, it was like word vomit coming out of my mouth, ladies. I have no clue what I said again, but it was just like something, 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 more women, yay. And then sat back down and people were like super awesome about it. And was like, yeah, you know, thanks for saying something. It just felt like a little weird because again, you know, no one's fault. It was just like one of those, let's try to get more women in the know so that they can sign up. Mm-hmm. So the next year came and there was an email for open submissions to speak at JSConf 2010. And I was like, well, I would be a hypocrite if I did not submit to this conference, being that I went up there and was like, get more women. And I was like, well, what's, you know, lead by example, right? Mm-hmm. And I decided to submit something and I had never done a solo talk before. And so I just went for it and I submitted something, I sent it out and I said, even if it doesn't get picked, I at least feel like I tried to do my part. And what I was like, sort, you know, practice what you preach.
Sure.
And I put it out there and it got accepted. And I was super pumped. And so I spoke at JSConf 2010 and I was the only female speaker there, but there was 8 attendees. So we had like 200 and something percent.
Increase.
You know, if you play the percentage game, it's really good. And ever since then, I submitted more and more and shared that story with people. And a lot of people had sort of similar experiences. And I thought it was really neat when I would tell people this story, how interesting it was to other people. And people were like, wow, you know, that's such a either unique situation or I totally relate to that situation. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, maybe there should be a place where we're sharing more stories like this. Because the idea that I really loved that I saw a problem and I was like, well, what's one to do about this? And I did all I could. And so for Ladies in Tech, I sort of wanted to do the same thing. I just wanted other to give women a place where they could share their story. And so people would realize that it's never like a perfect situation. You know, you're never like sitting there and someone's like, hey, you want to come talk at this conference? And you're like, I guess I've got some free time. And you're like, that went perfectly. You know, and that's not how it works. So I wanted to make sure that people could sort of read the stories about how other women are speaking in our industry and how they got started and how it's not always a perfect situation, but the payoff can be really big.
So what's the response been? Has it been almost a year since the site's been sort of up and regularly publishing?
February. So yeah, what is that, 7 months? 7 months. A little over half a year.
I don't do math well, so.
It's been about 7 months. And, you know, it's been really great. One, the interest in sharing stories, as you both know, because you wrote fantastic articles for it, has been overwhelming for me. The idea that so many people were like, yeah, that's awesome. I want to share this story too. And it's been really neat. It's been neat that everyone wants to share their stories. And then also people have written to me with the nicest feedback about how inspiring the stories have been. One of the coolest things that happened to me is I was in Florida recently for Front-End Conf. And while there, they basically had a two-day format. And the first day was scheduled speakers. And the second day was sort of an open format where anyone could sign up for it, but you had to sign up in advance. And there was one woman who signed up for it. And she had written to me and said reading Ladies in Tech had prompted her to sign up for it and it would be her first time public speaking.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And I was like, that is so awesome. And I went and I saw her speak and she was so good and so funny and like so charming. Like her name's Mina and she was just so excited. And at the end, she had a slide, like a screenshot of Ladies in Tech.
Oh, awesome.
She was so funny. She basically said, I want to thank Jen because Ladies in Tech prompted me to get up here and speak. So if I sucked, blame Jen.
Nice. But
you didn't suck and you're so awesome. And it was so cool. It was so cool to be like, here's something that we put out there, like a collection of people sharing their stories that has influenced people to share their stories.
So Ladies in Tech definitely has a heavy focus on women speaking. Why did you choose that particular arena versus another tech initiative?
For me, speaking is sort of sometimes the easiest way to get your knowledge out. I really also love writing and blogging and meetups and things like that. But speaking is sort of a way for us to be in person with each other. And we have what can be a pretty antisocial profession that we've chosen for ourselves. In computers, it's really easy to sort of be like, I'm just going to sit here in the corner with my laptop, you know, Blair Witch style. And sort of. So I really love conferences for that reason. I love that it gets us away from perhaps what our comfort zone is. Mm-hmm. And gets us more exposed to each other. And I think that the more and more diverse our conferences are, just the more ideas will be shared and the more different discussions will be have.
So the primary thing you mentioned about Ladies in Tech is that women who decide to speak are sharing their stories over how that happened or why they did it, et cetera, and so forth. Do you have any other plans for Ladies in Tech?
So we do. I'm excited about a few different things coming up. And one is a local meetup we're going to start with, which will give women a chance to, in person, come and sort of get the experience of talking in front of other people. And the plan is to start that in Philadelphia in the next couple of months and then possibly expand it to other cities. And just keeping it small, but giving people a chance to get sort of that feeling of what it's like when you first step up on stage. Or just in front of people, which can be, it can either be really exciting or full of adrenaline or sort of like you want to throw up. And yeah. I think that's something that until you've done it, it's hard to sort of imagine what that feels like.
Sure.
Getting up in front of a group of strangers or sometimes even getting up in front of a group of people you know just like feel really weird and make your heart race and sort of forget what you're going to say or your mouth goes dry. And I think setting up an environment or a meetup where people can practice that in front of each other will be really beneficial to people. Mm-hmm. So that's the goal for the meetup. And so we have some space that we're going to use. So just trying to finalize some dates to get the first one up and scheduled. And that's the first part. And then also, we, Val Head and I, are going to be starting a Ladies in Tech podcast.
Awesome. Ooh, awesome.
Yeah. So I might actually be bugging you guys about some advice for that.
When you work with your girl development students, do you ever talk about public speaking to them as an opportunity, or is it really not something that comes up?
It hasn't come up too much. Right now, those, besides people getting up sort of in front of the class and introducing each other or introducing themselves, that would be an awkward task to have to introduce someone else that you didn't know.
Yeah, that's like being in Leia's presentation where she asks you to talk to the person next to you.
Yes.
Totally. I suppose I could have them do that. Right now, at that moment, I think they might be intimidated enough. So
fair enough.
Right now, I think it's an interesting thing. For most of them, they're a little more focused on the code.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to getting into public speaking, particularly for our industry, what would you say is the biggest mistake men or women make when they try to do their first talk?
A couple of things. One would be giving up too easily. I mean, that seems kind of cliche, but the thing is, when we think about conferences, especially if you're talking about a one-day conference that has like six spots with submissions, it means a lot of people are not going to be accepted to speak at that talk. And getting rejections can be quite crappy feeling, I guess, is the most articulate way to describe that. And sometimes getting rejected in any parts of life is like, well, that's a bummer. And you do that little like sad Charlie Brown walk. But you know what? It's okay. These things happen. Steph Hay wrote a great post on Ladies in Tech, and she like listed off all of the conferences she had been rejected from. And I just thought it was so charming that she shared that with everyone, because the truth is, you know, it happens. You're not going to get in or accepted to everything that you want to speak at. And like, that's okay. We have a lot of conferences. So I think not giving up on something like that is really important. I also think it's important to really value your time.
Yeah.
I recently have been made privy to this knowledge of there's some conferences that essentially ask you to pay to speak at them. I don't know
so
if
wrong.
You guys have heard about this. It's like, I don't know if you've ever experienced this.
It's
but
academia.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
So basically, I had a friend who submitted to speak at a conference, got in, and then the conference said, okay, we'd love to have you speak. You have to pay for your conference ticket.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's really weird. Why would they do that? So they essentially are asking you to pay to give your time and your knowledge, and yet you still have to pay. And I think that's really bogus.
Yeah. Yeah. I've actually, there's a conference that they do here in Albuquerque every year. It's the Southwest Conference on Disability. And the past couple of years, they've introduced a technology track that Nobility has been trying to be involved with. And the conference itself requires anyone who's accepted to speak to pay. And I'm like, screw that. But Nobility kind of fronted the money for myself and another woman here in town, Virginia DeBolt, to speak so that we could talk about the topic of accessibility in the web to an audience that it's very relevant to, but it doesn't make sense to me at all.
It's so tough. And you're just like, if you think about it, and you know, it's hard starting out. Like, I'm not saying that you have to charge for speaking, but the idea of having to pay someone to talk is just so weird to me. And you know, you're giving up your time and you're putting in a lot of effort to come up mm-hmm. with talks. And yeah. So if you were like charging your regularly hourly rate for something like that, like if you think about speaking as more like that, as opposed to just like, oh, you know, you're letting me get up on stage, you know, it's a matter like it's really important to be humble, but it's also a matter of respecting yourself. And that won't be your only opportunity. So I think it's really important to sort of choose your opportunities wisely.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that there are a lot of opportunities out there. And they don't have to be huge conferences. They could be local meetups as mm-hmm. well, or sort of refresh groups or anything like that.
So when a person actually does get on stage, what do you think is the biggest mistake people make once they're actually speaking?
Counting on internet connection yeah. at a conference.
Which is ironic, isn't it?
It really is. But, I mean, we've all seen it, and it's such a bummer. It's such a bummer when someone goes up there and they want to demo something and they just can't connect to the internet, and you're like, oh, wow.
I've actually gotten in the habit where I avoid any web-based demos. I try and get everything I can onto my local system for that entire purpose, because it would throw me off so much if I was counting on it.
Exactly. I mean, that's like sort of a bigger thing, right? I guess just be prepared for anything, but be prepared most for the internet. it's sort of like, so what I do is I use QuickTime, has a built-in screen recording. And so you can do, I basically just record everything I would have done and then play it back live. So like you, Emily, I just keep everything there and that way I have it. And I think even if you do want to sort of live code or anything like that, totally go for it, but have sort of like those videos as a backup.
Mm-hmm.
So just in case it does not work, you're able to do that. It would be such a bummer for you to get up there and be like, okay, now I'm going to do this. And be like, no, I'm not going to do this. And then slowly like back away and not know what to do with your time. And I've heard the argument like, you know, it's an internet conference. There should be internet, but you know, it's also life. These things happen. So it's also about being ready for those situations. So you don't ever have to want to apologize to your audience. Mm-hmm. They don't know what your plan is. So you can get up there and start typing away and go to live code. It's not working. And then you can just be like, that's okay. I've got this. And always remember that they don't know what's supposed to happen. So you don't have to say anything like, oh, well, this was supposed to happen right there. If something sort of fumbles or it's like something doesn't load, move on.
Mm-hmm. And don't call attention to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's very improv-like. Like, it's very, like, actor-related kind of advice. Because when you do improv, you know, it's meant to be off the cuff. So even if you start a storyline during improv and it doesn't go the way you started or envisioned, you're just like, whatever, just go with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I feel like it ties into, and this is something I think I've only started to achieve this year with the talks I've given, is being present. Like, I may be prepared and I may have, in many ways, I memorize what I'm going to do, though it doesn't come across that way. But if I'm present and I'm paying attention to what's happening in the moment, not thinking about what I'm supposed to say next, but just trusting on the memory that I have, being present lets me at least not like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I can't do this right now or whatever. I'm just paying attention to what's happening and being really aware.
Love that. Totally.
So I have a question, not about speaking itself, but about the conferences and events, because, and I'm sure Leah has the same experiences of feeling like you're one of the few women attending and no female representation in the speaker list. What advice could you offer an event organizer to get better female representation, not only speakers, but also attendees? Because you mentioned in the beginning that JS conference, it wasn't anyone's fault that there wasn't more diversity, but in my opinion, not doing anything to attract diversity is fault. There is some responsibility. What do you think?
I see what you mean. You know, this is such a tough question. And it's tough because as soon as you start sort of being like, well, you know, if you start doing like quotas or being like, well, you should have at least 50% speakers of gender and 25% of different nationalities, you just start entering the sort of thing where people start getting upset. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that JS Conf EU does, and maybe US does as well, is they've now started doing blind submissions. And I think it's really neat because a few other conferences do this too, but the blind submissions basically allow completely non-biased choices. And I think that's a good way to, as a conference organizer, protect yourself from sort of any attacks on that. Mm-hmm. And also, as a potential speaker, to feel like you're getting a fair shot based on your subject and not about anything else. And I think it's an interesting approach that won't necessarily change any numbers because it sort of just depends on the topics, but I think it's a really fair approach.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one way to do it. Another way sort of I think people can do is sort of, Rachel Neighbors wrote this great article on Ladies in Tech about how Lanyard has a list of open calls for submissions, but I miss that stuff all the time. And so, you know, maybe ask some friends of yours to tweet that have a lot of followers. At Ladies in Tech, I always try to tweet about open calls so more people know. A lot of times it's just everything moves so fast on the internet. Sometimes you can't keep up. So sort of just asking around and asking people to sort of spread the word more, I think we'll get more submissions naturally.
Yeah, I want to bring up Converge Southeast. We all three of us were there this spring. And I just I think I said it easily 100 times to you, Jen, to you, Leah, to Jean, the organizer, just how diverse the conference itself felt. And I remember the last day we were waiting to get the van to the airport, and I just sat Jean down. I'm like, how did you do this? Because you have a fair representation of female speakers. There's a really nice mix of diversity in terms of the attendees as well. And he just said, it's a ton of work. It's really hard. You have to actively seek this stuff. It has to be something that's important to you as the event organizer and important to your attendees and your speakers that you're asking to be a part of it. And then you have to do the work to make it happen. You can't passively sit back and hope that you're going to achieve that.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
It's not easy. Certainly not easy. But the more we talk about it, I think the easier it's becoming.
Yeah.
It sort of stinks that we have to tackle this issue head on. And there's some really not all areas that you see on the web with this sort of subject is as nice as I think this one's going. Mm-hmm. You know, once you get over that, that's sort of how change happens. And then the more normal it will become. And we sort of, it'll hopefully become a non-issue eventually because it'll just be so regulated.
I hope so. I don't know. I'm skeptical. It's been hard for me. I mean, I totally feel like this topic is extremely positive, but as you mentioned, there's some negativity associated with it, and I'm trying not to bring it up because it pisses me off and I kind of want to vent about it, but that's not this platform. But, you know, it's one of those things that for me, I set a limit to the number of talks I'll give in a year because, as you mentioned, it's a tremendous investment of time, not only in terms of travel and being on site, but all the prep work that you do for it. But if I get asked to present and I've already hit my limit or it's not really a good fit for me, I really try and go through my network to see if there's another woman that I know and I've seen their work and that they have some kind of interest in it. And I try and get their names in front of the event organizers as like a replacement for me.
That's great. That's a great idea because it's based on referral.
In terms of women entering the tech world, is there a single bit of advice you could offer?
In general?
Yeah, just, you know, I don't know. I have some friends of mine who are always, they're like astounded at what I do, thinking that there's something special about, I mean, I guess there's something special about it, but that it doesn't seem like who I am as the day-to-day person being involved in tech and coding. Like I had a friend watch me write some HTML, just basic HTML, and she's like, that's incredible, because it seems so intimidating. But I feel like our field has a lot of opportunity for women or people who are parents who need to have flexible schedules or flexible work lives and working from home. And it just has so much of that that I, you know, what would you tell someone who's intimidated but intrigued?
For sure. And I guess this advice could go for anyone, but it's really important to make friends. Mm-hmm. This is probably in any walks of life, but especially this one. And again, that goes back to the fact that working in computers can be very antisocial. It's possible to spend a whole day by yourself without talking to anyone, right? You and your computer being friends. And it's important to remember that the more contacts that you make, the more it can help your career, both with like opportunities or referrals. And the more like it gives you the support system, you can call someone and be like, hey, this situation happened to me. Is this weird? Or, hey, I'm really stuck on this coding problem. Can you help me with this? And I think the idea of treating it like any sort of other job we would have, mm-hmm. where if I worked in a typical office job, like I love the idea of water cooler talk. You know, where you go mm-hmm. up and you're like, yo, did you see that season finale last night? Or how about them Bears? And that's one of the things that for me is really important that I never want to lose in computers, just sitting here with like sort of this box. I still want to have that water cooler talk with people. And I still want to have that system that doesn't make it feel like it's such like a lonely profession.
Mm-hmm. So we're tackling a lot of tough topics. And I'm going to throw you another tough question. So so we were talking about helping people enter technology and what, you know, we could do to help encourage that or make it less intimidating. But for me personally, I sometimes think it's as much or maybe even harder to keep women in technology or keep women speaking about mm-hmm. technology as it is to entice them in the first place. So how do you think we can keep them in tech and how do we keep women to continue talking?
Sure. Yeah, tough one. So,
because you're the expert.
You know everything.
Well, I am part of that target demographic. So I am coming from that aspect. Here's what I'll say. And this is what's worked for me and what I like. I like to see more sites like Ladies in Tech, which the thing that I love about this site is that instead of sort of being, this thing sucks, mm-hmm. blah, 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 Ladies in Tech is more about celebrating. Mm-hmm. And so it's more about focusing on the positive. And this sounds like a little like hippie hug everyone, but I sort of want, I'd rather focus on the positive in most aspects of my life and work. Mm-hmm. And if we sit there too much, I think it's important to vent for sure. A lot of people, I don't fault anyone. I want to make sure that's clear about venting or sharing sort of terrible experiences that have happened to them. I think that's a really important aspect too. I think when people share their personal stories, which sometimes have been terrible, it's good because if anyone else has that, they know they're not alone. Mm-hmm. Sometimes thinking you're alone with a story of like discrimination or anything can feel so awful. You sort of think like, am I making too big of a deal about this? Mm-hmm. Is this really weird? Am I the only one that's happened to? Maybe it's just me. And when you hear those other stories, the first step is like, oh, wow, that really sucks, but I'm sort of like, at least I'm not the only person that feels this way. And so I think that's one part. So one part is being open about everything that has happened and sort of bringing to light the fact that there is something to tackle. Mm-hmm. There is a problem and there is discrimination and this is something that isn't magically going to go away or doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So that's one, and I sort of leave that part to other people. And then where Ladies in Tech and other people I think need to come in is then sharing all the good stories. Here are the benefits of why it happened. For me, the stories that we share, and like we're now doing a bunch of giveaways right now on Ladies in Tech, also to conferences, because we're sort of embracing all the cool things. You get to go to conferences and talk to people. Mm-hmm. I just spoke at a conference in Norway. Like, I never would have gone to Norway if I wasn't doing public speaking. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's possible, you know, of course I could have taken vacation days and gone, but I probably never would have prompted. I probably would have been like, ah, I'm just going to go to the Jersey Shore. so I think there's a lot of benefits. Travel, exposure, it helps your career. There's all these great things. And I really like to focus on the things like that. The things that make it really worthwhile in staying and pushing and being one of these women in tech and sharing your ideas and sort of staying in the tech field. It's a really cool job. You know, as you mentioned, I'm sitting in my home right now. I have a cat that is very much wanting me to pay more attention to her. I can work from my backyard. I can work from the beach. It's a really cool job. I can get paid to speak in Germany or Norway or Florida. It's like one of those things that's like there's a lot of benefits and you can meet a lot of people and make friends. You know, I met you guys through going to conferences mm-hmm. and that's awesome. And there's so many good parts. And that's the part that I think is really sort of important not to forget. And they're two equally important sort of parts, like addressing the situation and bringing it to light and then also showing all the things are good and why it's worth getting through those really crappy situations.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think that all those things are really great. And one of the things that I love about Ladies in Tech in terms of the sharing the story is that I feel like it gives meaning to what you're doing professionally. Because, you know, there's like those, you know how they talk about the Maslow's, you know,
hierarchy of needs
and stuff. Like, I think there's also like a hierarchy of needs in order to be fulfilled in your career. And I think this is true for everyone, but I feel personally it's very relevant for women, is that when you communicate the meaning of why we're in technology and why we're doing this, and that will help keep them there. I was speaking to a friend of mine who actually, she left tech and came back to it. So her story was, she has a comp sci degree, and she said she first decided to quit programming or working in a technology firm, partly because she felt like, what's the point? Like, why am I doing this? Like, she didn't feel like she was contributing as much as mm-hmm. she could. So she quit computers and became a lawyer for international law because she thought that would help contribute. And she got her J degree and everything like that. Then the irony was, because she ended up getting a government job, she wasn't actually contributing as much as she thought she could. And then she ended up working for this social tech company that has offices around the world, and she helps build infrastructure in developing countries, technology infrastructure in developing countries. So then that brought meaning back to mm-hmm. her in technology, so she was able to use all of her skills, but back in her tech skills, and now she's in Africa, in India, and doing all these things, and still working in tech.
Mm-hmm.
So those types of things, figuring out how you can bring meaning or some sort of purpose, personally, I think would help.
I have to say how much I agree with you, Leah, and I think that's one of the reasons why we do this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I feel I love making websites. I really do. It makes me very, very happy. I don't know why, but it just does. But I don't feel there's, you know, the purpose is for me to make money and my clients to make money. But then that doesn't always satisfy me. But as terrifying as public speaking is for me, and it really, really is, when it's over, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I've given something. It's the same with this podcast. Each time we do a podcast, I feel so proud of not just that we did it on time and blah, 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 but I feel like we shared something of value. And even if it just matters to one person, like you said, Jen, that the Mina who presented and she just thanked you at the end, just one person being changed by some information you shared, it's just an incredible feeling.
It really is. And I think this medium is so cool because it sort of allows you to do that, right? At like you were saying how exciting it is, like you can write HTML and then there it is, instant. And there's not as many roadblocks into getting your ideas out. Getting people to read them or listen to them sometimes can be a little tricky, but you can get it out there for people to read, and that's really neat. And I think it's so nice to share the content with each other.
Mm-hmm. So I have one more hard question for you, Jen, and then we'll do some easy questions to finish up. This one's totally, I could just see it being a loaded question, but do you think your gender affects how you code, how you choose resources? Like, do you think gender brings something different to the table, or is it just Jen brings something different to the table, just like Emily or Mark or whomever?
You might think that this is avoiding your question, but I do think it's individual. I don't think there's a bunch of studies about this that, have studied things like that, but I feel like it's all individual. I think you'll always come across people that do things differently. And sure, some people will do things similarly, but that doesn't really, I don't think, depends on gender or race or anything like that. So I think it's sort of an individual thing right now.
All right. I think we should take a turn to like a little bit more easy questions, but it'll be up to you whether or not these are easy. Let's take a turn towards technical questions. Control Click is a podcast about content management systems and the stuff that surround it. So Ladies in Tech runs on WordPress.
Why?
Stop judging me. So here's the story of that. So one of the things that was really crazy about Ladies in Tech, and sort of you asked this when you're like, what has the response been, is when I approached people about this, everyone was like super on board. Everyone's like, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I'd love to share. Yeah, I'd love to design. Yeah, I'd love to help like fill out these ideas. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, this is cool. And I ended up having a ton of content, but no design. And I feel like coming from like an agency type background is you usually always have the other problem, right? You've got these designs, you've got these ideas, but you never have real content. And I'm like, well, this is weird. I have all this content, but no place to put it. And for me, WordPress was the easiest thing to get up and running right away. Just sort of use one of the pre-defined themes. I'm using like 2012, like the default installed theme, to get all that stuff in there right away. And then when I was setting that up and doing very limited customization on it, Jasenia Perez-Cruz, who is a designer at HappyCog, she was using a Typecast app, which is an app where you can just design sort of type styles in the browser. So she designed a type system for Ladies in Tech. I took that type, applied it to the CSS of the 2012 theme in WordPress, and like, you know, in an hour, you have a customized enough look to give you a unique website. And it was just really fast. And that's sort of why we went with WordPress. Plus, anyone, authors are familiar with the back end of that, which is really helpful because I have a lot of people helping. So, you know, I trained my sister, Alexis, has been helping with editing, and she hadn't used WordPress before, but, you know, I was able to show her like 2 minutes and she got it instantly. And so that was really awesome to be able to like do training in 2 minutes. And my sister's smart, but it was like really super simple to do. So that is why we chose WordPress.
Cool. I mean, it makes sense. Your priority was to get the site up and the content out there.
Yeah, and there
not showcase how badass you are with the CMS.
And you know, there's like nothing too crazy going on. We have categories. You know, we have RSS. We have a bit of an archive. There's nothing too nuts happening. The focus on the site is about the content, mm-hmm. and not, well, as you were saying, anything super fancy.
So what about your jenlucas.com site? Because it was on Expression Engine, and I was reading on your site that you moved it to Tumblr.
So let me go ahead and admit something to you guys. I might have a little bit of a Tumblr addiction. I think Tumblr is the most amazing thing in like maybe the entire world. It's so good. My friend Sequoia loves Tumblr and she totally like sold me on it. And you can get a blog up in like 30 seconds. I was sitting there one day and I was so hesitant against Tumblr. And then, are you guys Game of Thrones fans?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Totally. So when I started watching Game of Thrones, I was like, I basically started calling it Sex Hobbit because Game of Thrones is like the Hobbit, but with a ridiculous amount of sex. And so called it Sex Hobbit, and I had to make fun of all my friends that watched Sex Hobbit. And so in like 2 minutes, I created sexhobbit.tumblr.com and started posting ridiculous things about how Jon Snow is a major wuss and cries at everything. And so it started as basically just grinding people's gears with this, turned into my love affair with Tumblr, which was like, I can get any Tumblr up and running super fast and it's amazing. And so since I was already in the Tumblr interface all the time anyway, Kenny Myers had moved the Nerdery over to the Tumblr a while back too. I've gotten so familiar with it. And when I'm there, I go in and I'm like, oh yeah, I haven't posted on this in a while. And so it will remind me to update one of about 20 to 30 Tumblrs that I may or may not have.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I might have a problem.
So you're a secret Tumblr too.
I am. It's like a little bit ridiculous.
So did you do like a export from EE and then an import or what?
So I had talked to Kenny actually about how he did the Nerderies, but he had said it was quite complicated. And I didn't have that many posts, so I manually did it.
Oh, oh wow.
Yeah, I had about 5-7. I think I had about 34 posts.
Mm, okay.
All spread out. Yeah. And it was kind of funny to read through them again. Because like this is talking about when I moved to EE, this is really embarrassing. I had moved over my MySpace blog.
Oh my God.
Yeah, totally. So I had old MySpace blog entries in that thing. And it was just like, whoa. Yeah. I like review these. Like it was my first post is about that show Starcade. I don't know if you guys used to watch that. It was this like 70s game show where you played arcade games. It was awesome. And then my second post was reviewing online zombie games. And so as I was like moving it over, I was reading the post and I was like clicking on the links to see if they still worked. And some of them did. So then I got stuck playing like zombie games from like 2004 and that were terrible, but I couldn't stop playing them. So that's what took the migration the longest amount of time, was zombie games.
That's fun.
Yeah. So that's why I ended up moving over. For my love of Tumblr.
Well, and it seems like it fits better into your current workflow.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's really easy to tie everything up so you can, like, send your Instagram over or any, like, other tie-ins. It's, like, super easy.
Right.
Like, one click.
So this really kind of leads toward how you kind of choose a system for its specific use. How do you decide which CMS is the best fit for a professional project?
It's been interesting. It was a little different at HappyCog versus now as a freelance, but I feel like right now clients are way more opinionated about which CMS they want to use versus like 5 years ago. I think people are way more knowledgeable now and sort of what's out there. And there's a lot of new things out there. So I have found recently there's been sort of requirements around what CMS is being used.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of has guided a lot of things that I've been working on recently, which is like sort of cool, but sort of a bummer because there's so many more things I want to try out. Because now it just feels like there's so many more options too.
Yeah.
I still haven't tried Craft, which I would like to do. And, you know, I tried out Kirby the other day, which was like neat. And so I've just been like, and then I tried making like a Jekyll site the other day. Like, but I'm doing this all, like, these were what I was playing with when I was doing jenlucas.com.
Yeah.
To sort of see if I was going to use any of those, and more just because I felt like it was just sort of fun to play with all the new things.
So what do clients ask for?
So right now I've been doing a lot of WordPress work. There was like a lot of Drupal work previous to that, but now it's been mostly back to WordPress. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Somebody, you know, it's like jQuery. It's like, sometimes I feel like, you know, like when, I don't know if you guys used to like have a survey and you used to be like, what JavaScript framework, if any, would you like to use? And you'd like sort of examine all these other things. And then it just basically, everyone is jQuery now.
It's like, what's the, you know, if you want a tissue, some people just say Kleenex because it's like the term that they use to describe a given thing.
Totally. And that's how I feel like in the work I've been doing right now, WordPress is like basically the Kleenex.
Well, do you, I mean, now that you're doing independent consulting, it sounds like you're sort of going with what the client comes to you asking for. Do you ever feel like, or have you pushed back and said, you may think that's what you want, but based on your requirements, that's actually not a good fit? Or do you try and manipulate the tool they want to use to meet their requirements?
I would push back if there was reason to push back, or if it just sort of seemed like people were coming because they were like, I don't know, the only CMS I know is WordPress. But that hasn't really been the case. It's sort of the same way that like I look at it, is that people are already familiar with it and it gets people up and running so fast. Mm-hmm. I do think WordPress for the sites I've been doing is very easy to customize. And so it's just worked. But I think if I did see pushback, or if I felt like people were coming with that request without sort of anything to back it up, then yeah, I'd feel more than happy to just be like, here are some other options to consider. And I think it's always important, you know, to remember that business reasons are like strong reasons to drive a goal. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, stakeholders, anyone are really comfortable with something, whether that's jQuery or whether that's Kleenex or whether that's, you know, CMS, it's not something to just like, they can definitely sort of, education is important to let them know, but it is something that's important. Like that is a valid reason for being like, yes, let me see if this will work for you.
Wow, this was a great episode.
Yeah, I feel like we could continue talking.
I know. Well, we have a few questions we didn't actually ask, but
yeah,
I know. I'm so excited to like, I feel like you guys, I want to like have more podcasts, so just so we can like, I feel like we're in the same room. I like it.
Aw, yay. Well, we'd be happy to have you back.
Absolutely.
Let me come up with another Tumblr to talk about.
Yes. Perfect.
We'll call the episode Jen's Secret Tumblr.
Don't worry, I'll have like 50 by the time we do it.
So, well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Jen.
Thanks for having me.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
Well, I am on Twitter, Jen Lucas, Jen with two N's, Lucas with a K. And then also, one of my other favorite Tumblrs is my Tumblr where I celebrate my love of hovers, which is fuckyeahhovers.tumblr.com.
Amazing.
And of course, at ladiesintech.com.
Awesome. Thanks again, Jen.
Thank you.
We'd now like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Soulspace and Pixel and Tonic.
We also want to thank our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast, or visit our website, controlclickcast.com.
Don't forget to tune into our next episode when special guest Brandon Kelly is joining us to talk about craft. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Click Cast. See you next time.
Cheers.